Okay, we have a another little excursion now coming together, and we're actually being approached by a few kings. I wonder, can we grab a few words with your good selves, if that's okay? It's fine. Southside Broadcasting on location. It's all there. Good morning. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Now, share with us, our countryside correspondent here, Lou Bevan, was momentarily perplexed in terms of identifying the breed of these pigs.
These are middle white pigs, that's right. Yep, they're two middle white January gilts.
Exactly. I know, Lou, I have total confidence in you yourself. Anyway, questions from yourself.
Well, I'm looking at a fabulous, they're gorgeous, aren't they? Very old. Public have gone off them. Very wrongly.
No, surely not.
Yes, they're not a commercial breed. They've come home, actually, because the middle white is a Yorkshire pig. I think they're the sort of indicative here. But yeah, the public have gone off them. They're one of the slower, of the traditional breeds. And obviously, traditional breeds tend to be a little bit fatter with the meat. So you're quite right, the public have gone away from them.
And yet, without that fat, you get no taste.
Exactly that. That's the thing.
The point, look at them. They're beautiful. It's only when you put them alongside the modern hybrids that you will see a difference. But believe me, we've seen enough bacon carcasses this year. This is the breed that ought to be let to go to its full potential, dress that side of bacon, and then look at it. Compare it against what we've seen in the classes. It will be chalk and cheese. But then more importantly, get the frying pan out. Cook it, let the people taste it.
But certainly Neil Curtis of Lincoln would definitely say that in all sorts of ways, really, so I have to continue flagging that up.
The quality, they've got the right amount of fat for the meat. We're now being brainwashed into believing we want lean meat only. Okay, have your lean meat, but you won't have your taste.
That's the important thing about the traditional breeds. And, you know, as people are getting more cost conscious, having to look at different ways of feeding their families, these old traditional breeds, the cuts of meat you get, you know, the belly pork, the shoulder joints, those sorts of things, slow roasting meats, these are the guys that give you the good, tasty meat. And, you know, we say eat them to keep them, particularly with breeds like the middle white.
I think that's wonderful. I mean, that sort of sums up so much of the rare breed and rare species, etc. Eat them to keep them. Marvellous stuff. Because, of course, I was confused. I thought, is it a new NatWest brand that we've actually got here?
No, sorry, just a very old thing of having the boards. NatWest used to sponsor a lot of pig boards.
Clearly, it's a whole routine. Now, we've got a pig fan here with respect to Francesca. Francesca, you saw the pigs, like, oh, wonderful. Questions for yourself.
How many different breeds are there?
Oh, they're total. Now you've stumped me. There's probably around 30 different breeds, traditionals and moderns. I only keep the traditional breeds. I've got saddlebacks and middle whites. These guys have travelled up from Cornwall, so they've had a pretty long journey. And then, of course, you've got your modern breeds and Durocs and Landrace.
You can always tell a saddleback because it actually looks as though it's got a saddle on its back, quite literally.
Yeah, they're very identifiable, as are the Gloucester Old Spots. These guys, the white pigs, once you get into the Welsh and the large white, and the middle white's quite good because it's got the dished face. It's a very distinctive face. They're sometimes described as the ugly pig. I think they're so ugly, they're beautiful.
Well,
but
there we are, exactly. Yeah. Okay. Leslie?
They were just born in January, I understand.
Yeah, there's a January, both girls. So they were born on the 25th of January. So they're the babies of the crew. We've got some July gilt and a born. We were very lucky yesterday. We won the Middle White Championship, Breed Championship. So worth our while coming.
Congratulations. Always important from that point of view. So as I say, we're kind of middle of the show season now. Will you be heading up to various other events, or is this the sort of pinnacle of the year so far?
For us, it's the pinnacle of the year. The Southwest shows are all sort of fairly early on in the showing season. We've got a couple of one-day shows, and then we've got the show and sale at Warwickshire, the rare breed show and sale. So any of our show stock that we want to sell, we'll take along there, and we have a show and then sell them as well. So
wish you all the very best of that. I'm sure it'll continue ever onwards. When judges obviously sort of look at the middle whites, etc., are there any specific areas that they're sort of keen on? Is it a case of the face and such like?
Yeah, for all pigs it's breed standard, but particularly with the middle whites, you're looking for depth of body. As your friend's saying, you know, looking for where you get the cuts of the meat, but then it's the distinctive things, the dished face, the squat strong legs, straight back, good underline, because obviously you want the sows particularly to be able to feed the pigs, and the bore line to throw that in the pigs. So distinctive characteristics with middle white.
And of course we haven't done the crucial thing, because we literally just grabbed you for interviews, the listener might have actually caught up with, etc. Can we have your full name, please?
Yeah, I'm Caroline Dunstan, and I'm from Nansenoy Farm in Cornwall.
And I think the pigs have come along for the photo shoot, so fantastic stuff.
Thank you very much.
So from pigs to sheep, we're actually looking at the Rosebery flock from Thirsk, so it's a local area that's here, and I'm going to actually ask Lou to briefly interject in a few moments and say, what are we looking at here, apart from obviously the Rosebery flock?
We're looking at a very ancient Aubrey called the White-Faced Woodland. Tells you all about itself. It's got a white face and it lives in the woodland. Very ancient breed. In itself, it probably hasn't got a lot going for it. It's not a great butcher sheep. It doesn't have a big jigget, the leg at the back. The back isn't heavily muscled, but it's a breed that could make a living absolutely nowhere. So, as a genetic piece of the jigsaw, if you look at the new modern breeds, they've probably got this breed in them about 10 generations back to give them that ability to make a living on rather sparse grazing.
As you said, you've often been woken up, presumably, on scout trips via these sort of sheep, or is it just a case you keep them in your backyard?
Yes, it's certainly the minute I'm in a tent, I will invariably get a sheep brushing past it. I've been...
Consider changing a perfume, dear.
Yeah, maybe that might work, Alex. I'll have to try and work that one out. But I like sheep, but it's fascinating to learn all of these this information from Lou.
Yes, I do think, actually, Lou, we'd stumped you with respect to the breed of the pig there, but clearly you're in there, like swimwear, so to speak. Any questions from yourself, Francesca, about the show, how it's going so far?
Are these pigs... sheep pigs? Are these sheep winners, or are they...
Looking at it, they've got minor awards, but obviously these classes, these are minority classes. These are the old British breeds. Breeders like to bring them here just to show us that they're still in existence, and for the likes of yourself and me, if we did want any further questions about the breeds, these are the people that can really give us the information.
Well, we've just heard the words "That's incredible," spoken by Leslie Furman, with another sort of fascinating Lou tippet of information. Lou, what are you explaining now?
We're looking here at the Herdwick, the breed from up in Cumbria. They're known as the hefted flocks, meaning they don't need fences. They know exactly where the boundary of their field is. I'm just explaining here that when the foot and mouth outbreak came and we had to take them all out, how did we then bring in new sheep and teach them where the borderline was?
Did they not go to university like most sheep do?
No.
Fair enough. So how did they do it then?
Well, basically had to start again. Teach the sheep where they live. The sheep then in turn pass this on to their lambs. The elderly sheep then get taken away each year. But the lamb is imprinted and she knows exactly where she can go to. And then passes this into her daughter, who passes it on to her daughter. Some of these herd books, you can go back 200 years. They've been on the same piece of land. The sheep know where they live.
Great thing is we've also got the press taking photographs as well. Just going to grab a quick interview with this wonderful photographer. And which publication are you actually working for, sir?
I freelance, so I've been doing long-term projects on show culture.
Much so, like Southside Broadcasting. Ours has been going for 8 years so far.
Oh, has it? Oh, that's pretty good going.
How's yours going?
Yeah, very well. Yeah.
Now, you've obviously been taking some shots of our countryside expert here, Lou Bevin, and Francesca Furman and Leslie Furman, who are sort of currently on location. In terms of the show itself, how's it sort of shaping up? Are you just focusing on the Great Yorkshire Show, or are you doing other shows as well?
This project's sort of been going about 6-7 years. And I've been going up and down the country, literally from Cornwall to Orkneys.
So you might have touched base with your Lincolnshire show and the York and Notts show, other sort of things.
Yeah, there's a Lincolnshire show. I suppose it's the best way to describe it. It's like Jacques Tati comes to a British agricultural show.
I like it. Very good. So that's the whole routine to the whole system there. It's just fantastic stuff. So obviously we're in the sheep area now. Do you intend to try and get coverage over the full 3 days of everything from the hounds through the sheep right through to Leaping Lorenzo? Or is it just the responses of people? Is it the responses as the people
come? It's very much sort of people watching. I don't literally cover everything from sort of top to bottom, so to speak. I sort of focus on certain things.
I think we should commission a report for Southside Broadcasting and Siren FM in Lincolnshire to a year in the life of what you're doing, actually.
Absolutely.
An audio package.
Oh, good idea. I like anything with a bit of free publicity.
We'll exchange cards. And let's talk about free publicity. How can people actually see the end product of your work? Is there a website?
There is a website, but at the moment, I've probably got one more season before I finish it off. And then the plan is to try and actually get it exhibited back at the shows, because I like the idea that you sort of see the images and the sort of slightly surreal sort of nature to the images, and then as you walk round you see all these things as you're going around the show. So I kind of like that interaction with the public, and also the fact that maybe a lot of the public don't always go to photography galleries and this kind of thing. So it's a way of sort of reaching an audience perhaps that wouldn't step into a photography gallery.
Well, precedent is already there, because I know Javen Liam has got his exhibition of photography in aid of the PPR Foundation in the Woodland area. So I think probably the next year or two you could have a photography exhibition there as well.
Never know. Yeah.
And your name and the website address is?
Well, my name's Angel de Serra. And the web address is angeldesera.com. So that's ANHELDESERRA.com.
Okay, we have referred to Lubevin in the past when he's not been breeding rabbits as the Alex Ferguson of the pigeon racing world. Before we actually go into a fine piece with the Royal Pigeon Racing Association, Lou, how are the pigeons coping so far?
Well, I'm quite pleased to come here today because we can obviously get the lowdown on a performance which probably is going to go down in history. The Tarbes National being won here into Yorkshire this year. Pigeon covering 740 miles. Beating pigeons on the south coast of England because he kept up an average speed which was greater than theirs. I believe they thought they'd got the National one down there about 8 o'clock the night before.
Is this true, sir?
It is very true, yes. The pigeon flew into Keighley and was timed at 8 o'clock the following morning, whereas the other pigeons had been timed on the evening before in the south of England. But that had obviously continued on and flown, I would think, probably the last 150 miles on its own.
So another record breaker for Yorkshire, basically.
Excellent record, yes.
Fantastic. OK, questions from yourself, Lee?
Well, just to say that, you know, looking at the breeding of the bird, I was interested in it, and I see that it's out of the Chris Gordon birds, which actually did it a few years ago, not quite as far. But, of course, Chris got the ultimate accolade of also winning the National that particular year. And I look that the pigeon is bred out of the two birds that were first and eighth in the Open, that first and second section, first and eighth Open, and they both figure in the pedigree of this particular bird.
Yes. Yeah, that's correct. I mean, those birds held the record for Chris in a distance performance, but this now has broken that record. But I think Chris will be very pleased that it's a pigeon from his own breeding that's taking the record, yeah.
Today's the day Prince Charles obviously comes along to the Great Royal Show, and I'm looking at pigeon racing and the royal patronage. The Royal Pigeon Racing Association, of course, proud to have royal patronage with Her Majesty the Queen, the patron, and also she's got a racing loft at Sandringham. I wasn't aware of that.
Yes, she has indeed. Sadly, the loft manager died recently, and so they're in the process of replacing him. We don't know who it is yet, whether it's a man or a woman, but we know there are women interested in the job.
Have you considered putting in for it yourself?
Oh, no. I'm quite happy to be staying in Yorkshire.
Do you know, we haven't actually identified you. Your name, sir, is?
I'm David Higgins. I'm president of the Royal Pigeon Racing Association.
OK, David. Leslie, any questions?
Yes, sir. I've noticed on your brochure here you've got pigeon racing, a sport for young and old. Is it on the increase?
Sadly not. I mean, it's the reason we really come to places like this, to try and raise awareness of pigeon racing. We do a lot to try and encourage young people to become pigeon fanciers. Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, so if I wanted to get into it, where would I start?
Where would you start? Well, what we're trying to build up information on our website, because we're finding that more and more young people are visiting the website. So we're putting information on there to encourage people to go and find out about the pigeons through their local club and follow it in that way, and we try to build up an interest for them, really. Yeah.
I noticed there how many different varieties of pigeon you had. Now I have to say I never realised that there were that many different varieties. You know, you just see the pigeons as, oh, they'll come and pick up some of your titbits or that you've left out from fish and chips or so on and so forth. So yes, I was very surprised at that.
Yeah, I mean, there are dozens and dozens of different shapes and sizes and colours of pigeons. And we have a show in January in Blackpool, which is the biggest show of the year. We have racing pigeons and fancy pigeons in that. And it's quite unbelievable, really, the range of different pigeons that can be seen there. Yeah.
I think it was Ken Livingston who actually introduced a hawk to actually start reducing the standard pigeon populations in London. And I noticed you've got a leaflet with birds of prey and racing pigeons, the concerns, the facts, of the way forward. Is this a serious threat to pigeons and racing pigeons in particular?
racing pigeons, the sport is really devastated by peregrines and sparrowhawks, and they're protected birds, and fanciers become really frustrated because they can't do anything about it. They can see these hawks attacking their pigeons, and just the law forbids them to do anything about it.
Of course, Lou, you had an experience last year, not with a hawk, but with a fox that unfortunately devastated your prize pigeon, I believe.
Yeah, I was sick last year at a time on the day. It was my first season back last year, so I'd only got yearlings in the shed. And we got to the channel, and for laser 321's not too bad. But they got a shock when it was signs for me at 5:37, and I turned up with two yearlings. But I was very pleased to get one on the day at 13¾ hours. But unfortunately, two weeks afterwards, I had got the fox in. And Sod's Law said it, he only killed two, but he killed that hen. So it sort of gutted me for the season. But, it's not a fair playing field. Birds are protected, but why aren't our pigeons protected then?
It's a problem. If a fox was attacking chickens, then a farmer could shoot the fox. If a dog was attacking cattle or sheep, then the farmer has a right to protect his stock. But a pigeon fancier has no right to protect his own pigeons against the hawks. And it's really frustrating.
Fran?
What exactly is pigeon racing?
Pigeon racing, really, I mean, basically, it's pigeons are taken away from their own loft to a designated place, and they all go together in a vehicle. They're released, and they fly back to their own home. And we know the distance from the release point back to each individual loft, and it's a case of measuring time and distance and work out the speed for the fastest average speed over that distance.
It's all computerised, and some of those records, as Lou said, quite amazing. Now, finally, we've seen this these wonderful little things which says, found a stray racing pigeon. If you find a stray racing pigeon, there's a list of key things to actually do there, including obviously getting in touch with the Royal Pigeon Racing Association on www.rpra.org. These must be quite handy mementos, really, just for people to actually have.
Yeah, people very often pick them up and use them as bookmarks, which is...
always good.
Always useful. Yeah, I mean, the important thing with when a stray pigeon arrives is it's more than likely looking for water, more than likely looking for food, and a little bit of rest. And if it's particularly an older bird, if it has food, water and rest, it's probably going to go on its way the following day when the sun's shining. And that's the best thing for it. It's better than being taken home in a box. Young birds sometimes are a little bit different. They tend to go somewhere, and if there's free board and lodgings, they probably stay for a little bit longer.
But much like radio presenters, I find really the same thing. A reminder, it's www.rpra.org. David, it's been a delight to touch base with your good self, and we look forward to seeing you again probably next year, but certainly as the show season proceeds.
Okay, thank you very much indeed.